Hey, welcome to the Product Leadership Podcast from Lighthouse London, where we talk about how to validate, launch, and maintain successful digital products with product owners, innovators, digital experts, and founders. Lighthouse London are a digital design and product development team who spent the last 10 years helping people conceive, build, and steer digital products. You can find out more about us and more podcast episodes at wearelighthouse.com. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, cheers for tuning in. We're back again here talking about something super exciting today. I'm joined by infrequent co-host, Russ.
Hello.
Hi there. Remind people of what you do.
I am the design director at Lighthouse.
Nice, nice and fancy stuff. It's been a while since you've been on here, I think.
I don't know, I got banned for low listenership. Analytics were working against me.
That is absolutely harsh. So today the topic of conversation is roadmap management, is that right?
Yeah, I think we want to talk about the processes you go through to prioritize what's in your backlog. And obviously your prioritized backlog makes up what your roadmap is going to be.
So this comes from projects we've worked on in the past. Spoiler alert, there is a download for you to grab at the end of this once you've obviously listened to what we're saying and taken on board all the lovely knowledge. But yeah, you can go on our website, wearelighthouse.com/backlog, to grab all the goodies you need from this at a later date. So give us a bit of background, Russ. Who's this for and why would you use it?
Yeah, so I think any existing product or even someone who's looking at, you know, canvassing a new product, you're going to have a backlog, and your backlog basically just contains all of the features that you don't have yet but you want to build at some point. And I think any kind of healthy business idea or product idea, you probably have loads and loads of things that you could do. That's a good thing, and I think that kind of grows over time as well. But with that comes the issue that, you know, you only have finite resource and time, and you have to work out what you're going to be building next.
But that's easy because I sort alphabetically and work through one by one. Why do I need this?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, alphabetically that works for some companies, strangely. But for the most part, you'll want a slightly different framework than that to work out where to focus your energy. I think it's probably worth saying that you know, how you determine that is quite you know, specific to you as a business, as an individual. And what your kind of approach is. We've come up with a few for different clients over the years. And of course, there are other, you know, industry standard and template ones you can have a look at as well.
So what we want to get to is a weighted backlog that we can all work off. That could include UX tasks, UI tasks, the sort of stuff that we generally work on. But obviously, there's going to be a load of development stuff in there as well. But it's essentially a list that we can work through with whatever team we're working with to push things forward and make progress.
Yeah. And however you approach it, you want to have some way of essentially determining a score. Based on factors we'll get into, and that will tell you, great, this thing has 10 out of 10, so that's the top of the backlog, and it's going to be the next thing that we work on.
Cool. So give us some obvious ways in which you'd weight a backlog.
Yeah, so obviously this kind of reflects a lot of what we've said in the podcast before, but we want to be designing products for people, for users, or for an existing product then for your customers. And so one of the first things that we want to be doing is speaking to those people and finding out what's important to them. So a lot of this comes up in and around our discovery phases. When we talk about speaking to people, we don't just mean your users as well, but you may have a set of stakeholders that you're trying to work out the priorities for as well. That can be kind of one of the balances that you're trying to make as well. But yeah, generally, it would be silly to not be talking to people who are going to use your product about what, you know, what they're lacking at the moment, what frustrates them, or, you know, what other products they've used where they've got a killer feature that's turning them away, that kind of thing.
And so you probably broadly group that into perceived value from the customer or the user.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's I mean, it's not one that, like, you're making that up as you talk to them, right? Someone says, I really, really want that, then it gets a 10. You know, there's no kind of statistical method behind that. You're just kind of making things up as you go along, judging it. Not making things up, you know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, we've had some interesting ways of trying to determine that as what is the most kind of popular or most mentioned. That's actually one of the metrics that we used in a previous project. for an existing product. So basically, we were just tallying up how many mentions a feature got in interviews with customers, and that would just give us a percentage of people mentioned this. So if almost everyone's mentioning something, that's getting a high score in mentions. So that's a good one if you're talking to customers about their needs.
What examples have you got of working with internal people to determine stuff like that as well?
Yeah. So as we mentioned, if you have a team of stakeholders or a few stakeholders, you probably are one of those people as well, if this is a project that you're running. And we need some way of determining, again, what their priorities are. What we find when it comes to discovery phases is that stakeholders often have quite different views of kind of what the mission is for the product right now, what the biggest issues are. You know, if someone's very customer facing, they'll usually have quite a different perspective from the person who maybe is closer to the financial side of it. So you'll get very different perspectives. But again, we deal with a similar kind of format of, what do you think is the most lacking thing in the product right now? What are you hearing about the most? And just kind of get that perspective. Even things like the stakeholders' pains related to the product itself. You don't usually think of your stakeholders as users, but actually, if you have a content management side to your product and you have a team that's really struggling to do something in your product, like internally, that could also and should make its way into your backlog too. Because again, that, may save you money, makes people pleased about it on the actual internal team.
Yeah, certainly with the more complex tools have a lot of stuff to do. You've got a marketing site, you've got a product, you've got all sorts of sides of it that need attention. So trying to figure out what mm-hmm. to do next is very tough.
And actually, the marketing site, that's a really good point. It's not something that's often thought about. But, if your business goal at the moment is just to increase signups, you don't want to be focusing on the inner workings of the product, but actually your marketing site or social campaigns, however you're getting the message out there, that should actually have an impact on what you're building next.
Hey, it's Alice from Lighthouse here. Have you got a product that has users, revenue and traction, but is let down by its looks? Our product makeover breathes new life into digital products that are in need of some UX and UI expertise. Talk to us about how our user-focused approach can turn your product around and take it from good to great. Find out more at wearelighthouse.com/makeover.
So give us some examples of other factors that you might use that are a bit more analytical, come from numbers that we can kind of get from different places.
Yeah. So analytics is another great perspective. It's the one that's the least subjective out of these. Talking to people, you have biases to deal with, and you have to design tests around that to make up for those biases. But analytics tend to give you a much clearer picture. So for example, if you're hearing from your stakeholders that a feature is really slow and sluggish and people hate it or not used, you can get an objective, quantifiable answer on that by digging into the analytics of a platform. Sometimes that's as easy as your very basic Google Analytics setup, like page views, or if you have click events tracked. Sometimes that's a little bit more difficult to get. If we think about something like you have a bookmarking feature in your product and customers can bookmark certain things, you don't really have an easy way of collecting that data in an analytics platform, but it may actually be hidden in your database. How many users actually have, saved bookmarks, that kind of thing. So the analytics gives you good perspective on whether something's getting used a lot, that kind of thing.
And I suppose once you've got the base level data there, if there are questions, you can work that into your research as well and ask people how they find certain features, what problems they have with them.
Absolutely, yeah. And also determining which users are actually like the people who really use a feature loads and talking to them about that because they have the most experience. So that can give you a really good perspective on kind of where your product is right now. The other good thing about that is, it's kind of as an aside to your backlog, but having those metrics means that once you actually take on, improving a feature, you can actually measure against, how much value you've added afterwards, which is always nice.
So one thing that's often important is cost, resource, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's a thing you'd expect to report on here.
Yeah.
How do you go about determining that?
So breaking up a feature into the kind of the teams that are responsible for it, you may have some features in a backlog which just need one team to make a small change. So something that's just development only, something that's just design only. You may have a feature which needs expertise from each of those teams. So what you're trying to work out is the cost and how much investment is required for each of those. You'll often find that something that touches on less of those teams is something that you can get done a lot quicker. Yeah, you're trying to work out how much effort is coming from each team to get a feature completed.
And that doesn't mean to say that high effort means it won't be done, but it's just making sure that you're aware of all this stuff so you can evaluate which you choose to work on next.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, higher effort is just a higher risk, right? You're putting more, you're backing a feature more than others, so you kind of want to make sure that investment's worth it.
And so there's one thing we've done sometimes around testing or kind of seeing how you can evaluate this stuff without actually doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
How would that work?
Yeah, so can be a little bit cheeky, but there's a few different ways of doing it. So we were just mentioning, something with which is a big investment for your team and a lot of development or design resource. You want to be quite sure that is the right thing to build. And so one of the ways you can do that is kind of fake that it's already there. So you can do that in a few ways. It can kind of boil down to something as simple as a button that actually doesn't do anything yet, which is kind of why I say it's a bit cheeky, because
it is
sneaky. You want to be careful about how you manage the experience of when someone actually clicks on it.
Just like 404 page.
Yeah, 404 feature doesn't exist yet.
Browser closes.
So you want to manage that in some way, but you're going to get a really good view of how much interest people actually have for that feature before you've built it. If clicking on a download button that doesn't work yet, if telling the user that this is coming soon, like you're still being honest about that thing as well. And what you might determine is that actually so few people are clicking on your little experiment that you've just saved yourself, months of work by not actually building something that people aren't interested in.
Yeah, and I guess that could work in a bunch of different ways. So it could allow you to save a portion of your time for these sort of experiments,
mm-hmm.
Running a few where you can before getting to dev as a kind of side project, or it could also be worked into your what you see as your development or design workflow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think another example we've done for a project before is we had quite a few key features for a product, and we weren't entirely sure how to balance like which one was the lead kind of feature to sell. So what we did is we just A/B tested some different banners with the sign up button. So we called this one feature A is like the main focus of the banner with a sign up button. Then the next one talks about feature B, and we just measured what kind of responses they got based on the feature that we mentioned. And again, that shows you the interest that people have. We haven't actually had to build those features yet, but we're just collecting email addresses so that when we do, we know which way to kind of pivot. Also, in a product development process, doesn't matter how much you're paying for your development resource, and to be honest, design sometimes, bugs are going to creep up in your product.
Indeed.
and that's something that you can't avoid, but it also kind of gives you a new issue to deal with, which is, do I focus on fixing existing things or do I just focus on building new stuff? And I think this is, it's very much down to the kind of stuff that you're finding. If this is a minor typo that you found somewhere in one, terms and conditions pages or something, maybe it's lower down the backlog. But if customers are reporting it, like the fact that they've not only found it, but actually contacted you to tell you that they found it, probably means it's quite important.
Yeah.
In some product development cycles, there'll be set time, in sprints or something where you just focus on bugs. There's a few different ways of handling that.
So you might have a kind of separate waiting for bugs specifically, mm-hmm. then,
yeah.
Based on if a user found it or these kind of things.
Yeah, you'll have heard phrases before like critical bug or in sprint critical bug, that kind of thing, which basically means this thing is so important that we should be not be working on new things until that's fixed.
But I suppose having a way to figure out if it's really critical is quite important. Otherwise, yes. Everything is critical and priority high on all that. Doesn't really help.
Then you're just a maintenance team forever.
Yeah. So we kind of want to go into like a made up real world example, but maybe Russ, you could just talk through how you'd set this kind of thing up and mm-hmm. how it would look and how you'd use the tool to then figure stuff out.
So this example, we'll use one of the more industry standard setups here, but again, choose your own. So this one is based around desirability, feasibility, and viability. So when we talk about desirability, we mean what the customers are looking for. And as we've mentioned, the best way for you to do that is to speak to your users and find out what their kind of biggest asks are at the moment. And that will give you a score based on how popular something is coming out of those interviews. Feasibility is next, and that is around how easy or difficult it is for you to produce this. You know, is this fitting in with the capabilities that your team currently has? Is this a, you know, do we need to hire in specialists to do something like this? If we're talking about, you know, a complex search algorithm or something that's actually been quite difficult to pull off, and that makes it less feasible for you. So measuring, you know, how feasible something is would be your second metric there. And the last one is viability. So is this feature kind of sustainable? Is it going to make us money, or is it actually quite an expensive thing ongoing for us to do that may have impact on pricing models, that kind of thing? So that would be our viability.
Nice. And so where do you put all this information?
Yeah, so we'd recommend putting together a spreadsheet for this. Quite a simple thing to do.
Very simple.
Yeah. Set of columns. I don't need to describe what a spreadsheet looks like. So a spreadsheet, right? So it's like A through Z, but you can go further than that. Yeah, so we've actually put together just a quick example spreadsheet of this with a few features in it, prioritized in those three dimensions. So you can head over to our website to have a look at that as well.
wearehouse.com/backlog. But you'd have each feature in a row, and you're going to score them like 1 to 5, 1 to 10. It doesn't really matter, right? You can do whichever you feel is fit.
Yeah, I like to go 1 to 1,000, just so I feel like I'm really certain on the score of each one.
Wow.
But I recommend, you know, yeah, maybe 1 to 10 is fine.
So it's totally down to you. No real rules. Obviously, some people are really breaking them here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's just there in front of you. You can use color coding. You can use whatever you want, really. It's quite a simple task. And you can obviously then sort columns by certain amounts. All very simple stuff. But it's just a bit better than having a big long list, which is kind of sitting in front of you worrying you, and you can try and somehow evaluate these numbers, see which has the most greens if that's what you're after, and then have a discussion around what to do next. Cool. So remember to head on over to the website to download that. Hopefully Russ, you'll be back soon for another pod
if I'm allowed. Yeah, if we yeah, get the listenership. Otherwise, the stats, I guess. Yeah, I'll be out for a few months.
We'll keep a keen eye on downloads of the spreadsheet and listeners to the podcast in this one. So
like,
double
and subscribe
stats.
Guys, like and subscribe.
Nice one. Until next time, see ya.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want more product leadership content, then head over to the Lighthouse site, wearelighthouse.com, for more podcasts and blogs. To find out more about our product leadership framework, check out wearelighthouse.com/PLF. Find us on Twitter using @wearelighthouse, and if you've enjoyed the show, then we'd love a rating in iTunes to help spread the word. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to see the archive and get any future shows. Until next time, we'll see you then.